20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. You can find the podcast at Pack-A-Day Podcast. I wish we had a better slash more fun episode lined up for you today. I do not. I'll be transparent. I didn't know right after the game if I was going to go live or not. I did. We ended up talking for 2 hours on the live post-game show. I didn't know if I was going to record this one or not. I would have done something today. Obviously, we did the two-hour live show. Thought maybe about doing another live show later today, but ultimately decided to put together this episode. I don't have a ton noted down for this one. A lot of this is going to be just from the heart, from feel, from what I am kind of going through after that game. And I'm sure what a lot of people are kind of feeling after that game. Like I said, still very numb to what happened. We shouldn't be. We've experienced this 1,000 times before, it feels like. And yet it doesn't ever feel any easier or any better. And for a variety of reasons, the Packers don't lose easily in playoff games. They lose usually in the most heartbreaking and excruciating and just kick you in the nuts fashion. And this was a really great example of that. And I've joked in the past of like, ooh, what new creative way are they going to find to lose this time? And they spun a pretty good one in this one. Good job, narrators, of telling a new heart-wrenching story of how to lose a game. We'll talk about that and what that means for Green Bay moving forward. I did rewatch the game. Don't recommend doing that. It's not a ton of fun. This had the roller coaster of emotion where you had everything that you wanted. It's one of those 2014 Seahawks type of games where you just look back at it and you're just like, what just happened? I'm sorry, say that again. To be up 21-3, end of half, having the ball with the opportunity to get points and getting the ball in the second half is just absurd. To in the end of the game to get that touchdown where you go up with what 11 minutes left or whatever it was, they're a 95% plus chance to win at that point in time. And to again choke that away. Make no mistake, there's no other way to put this. This was a total and complete choke job by Green Bay. And it's, again, one of those where you want to give people credit with all the injuries and all the players that are hurt and all the important players to get it to 21-3 and to have it with an opportunity to be up two scores late in the game. And you want to be able to give credit for the depth that was built on this team and for how hard guys tried and for Matt LaFleur during decent portions of this game, putting in players in positions to be successful and to get out to that huge lead. But when you choke it all away at the end, it's really, really difficult to do so. So we'll go over all of it, at least as much as we can right here. We'll have a couple days to digest this one as well. I recommend checking out the live show as well. Kudos to everyone for that showed up. We had over 3,000 people for a while. Over 2,000 people were even still in it right around the end after 2 hours. If you'll forgive me or if you'll just indulge me, I just want to start before we jump into anything else with a few thank yous. First of all, to you, the viewer and the listener, it's never easy to put a season to rest. And as you guys know here, we do this 365 days, so we're not going anywhere. But I would be remiss not to give you my most sincere thank you for following along all throughout the season and for enjoying the show and commenting. And whether you are upset with my takes or like my takes or anything in between, I do really appreciate the support of not just myself, but everyone here at the podcast. So thank you for you guys every single day. It means so much to be able to get to do this. And even in the darkest of days from a Packers standpoint, to be able to get to talk Packers every day is a blessing and a privilege. I don't take it for granted. It means the world to me. So thank you. Thank you so much for that. For the 300 plus super chats and the 2 hour chat that we had in the live post game show, one that I didn't even think I wanted to do slash was sure I was going to do. And for the thousands of people that showed up and all the people who, tipped the super chats and everything, that was a good moment for the soul to kind of go through that and maybe have some sort of therapy with it. So thank you to everyone for that. A huge shout out to Luigi's Pizza and Habish Habish and Rotier for sponsoring our show. Luigi's Pizza will continue to be our sponsor here, hopefully forever, but certainly through the off season as well and heading into next season. Habish Rotier was with us through the season, so they'll wrap up this week. But just really wanted to give a shout out to both. I know nobody's going to feel like any sort of victory pizza. There's no victory pizza to be had today, but if you need to cope, I cannot recommend Luigi's enough. Check them out over at luigispizza.com, on social media at Luigi's Pizza. And thank you, Luigi's, for just being such an incredible partner of ours all year long. And Habish Rotier as well. Thank you guys for sponsoring us all throughout the season. I really can't stress enough, when you call them, you're going to talk to a lawyer directly. That doesn't happen everywhere. They know how to speak Wisconsin. They're local. They love the Packers. Hopefully you don't need a personal injury attorney, but if you do, I cannot recommend Habish enough. Check them out over at Habish.com, Habush.com. I want to give a huge shout out to the entire podcast team, from Tyler doing the thumbnails to Camille and all of our guests, Justice Mosqueda and Paul Brettel. And I don't even want to necessarily start naming names because I'm sure I'm going to forget everything. The Paul Farrington Show, Carmen Vitale, et cetera, Mike Wall. Again, just everybody that is a part of our video efforts, and then everybody on the audio side as well for covering this 365. And then the 38,000 of you who are subscribed on YouTube, the 700 plus Packaday podcast members, and the thousands of you that watch every single day. Again, I say I cannot thank you enough for all of your support. We will talk about what's ahead for Matt LaFleur and what's next for Green Bay. We'll get to that at the end. I have a lot of things that I want to say about it. I don't know how long today's show is going to be. I don't think it's going to be a super long one, just because, again, I'm still kind of sorting through how I feel about everything. As far as what happened in this game, Green Bay got out, obviously, to a 21-3 lead, played for up until the missed field goal at the end of the first half, about as flawless of a first half as you could have played. Even caught some breaks. You had the Christian Watson fumble that Romeo Doubs is able to jump on. You convert some fourth down plays. Chicago has a couple plays that don't go their way. They fail on fourth downs. And it's as beautiful of a first half outside of a missed Brandon McManus field goal at the end, which was a 55-yarder, which I would be willing to forgive him for more if it wasn't for a complete crap show of a rest of the game from him. But that was as clean and as beautiful of a first half as you could imagine. And then, of course, the second half's the exact opposite. And you go, what, 3-and-out, 3-and-out, 5-and-out, 3-and-out in your first four drives. You have, I think, what, like 10 total yards on those four drives to start the second half. And even through all of that, you get the ball again. You recover a Josh Jacobs fumble. You get it around midfield. It was actually a really good return up until the fumble. And then as soon as that's done, right, you go down, you score the touchdown. Matthew Golden, heck of a time to come up with his first touchdown as a Green Bay Packer. And you're still feeling good. And again, 95% chance to win. And then touchdown Bears. Green Bay doesn't get anything on offense. Touchdown Bears, and they did get stuff going on offense, but missed a field goal again, and then touchdown Bears, and then Green Bay can't convert at the end. And I'll say this, I actually think as injuries have been the sort of through line for the season, and that's not an excuse for this, it's just not. You had the opportunity to win and you choked it away. Just as like one final injury kick to the nuts, the Sean Ryan injury cannot be overstated. I there's a huge part of me that thinks they win that game if you don't get that 10-second runoff and you're able to get up there, spike the ball, have a little bit more time. That was a massive, massive play in that game. For you get that big completion down the field to Jaden Reed, and you're driving and you feel really good about where things are at. And now, again, we'll talk about it, not having those timeouts and wasting some timeouts in the second half. And that's a Matt LaFleur thing. We'll talk about it. But I really thought that injury to Sean Ryan was about as, you know, just devastating of a play in that moment to have to run those 10 seconds off. So just, again, another injury. Edrin Cooper had an injury, another huge player in this one that went out. But they completely blow it. Again, Chicago goes down with relative ease when they needed to. And when Green Bay had to have it at the end, they just couldn't finish it off. And again, the 10-second runoff was massive there, but a complete choke job in the second half. And what really stings is this is sort of an amalgamation of all the things that went wrong throughout the year and really through the last few years with this particular brand of the team, where you don't keep your foot on the gas, or at least you're not able to. I don't think it was for lack of trying. They only ran the ball six times in the second half. So if your idea is like, oh, they just took their foot off the gas and just try to keep handing the ball off and trying to bleed clock, that wasn't that. They only passed it six or ran it six times. They passed a ton. So I don't think it was that. They just executed extremely poorly. They had penalties. They should have had more fumbles in this game. In fact, I mean, you have got a Darian Kennard fumble. You've got a Josh Jacobs fumble. You've got a Christian Watson fumble. And somehow all three of those went Green Bay's way. They won the turnover battle. Love had four touchdowns, no picks. Just like if you look at all of the outline, anything in this game, it all should be Green Bay. It all should be Green Bay. And yet this is, again, what Green Bay does is they find new creative ways to lose. And so the second half of this game, choking away a win and, you know, brutal, god-awful special teams. You had a penalty on the opening kick return again for like the billionth time this year. You had three missed kicks by Brandon McManus. And because of that, if you just make one of those three previous kicks, field goal, extra point, or field goal, and that final drive, you can kick a field goal to tie it or win it, depending on how many you made, or you might not even need it. Chicago would have needed another onside kick if he made all of them. And so you don't have the operation well enough, and McManus misses kicks. I get Rich Bisaccia can't make kicks for Brandon McManus, but this is not just that. You had a fumble by Josh Jacobs on a kick return. Thankfully, they were able to recover it. Devin Duvernay hit a huge punt return. Again, huge systemic, decade-long issue on special teams that has haunted them in the postseason so many times against the Seattle Seahawks with a fake field goal, right? With the onside kick recovery with Brandon Bostic, with the 49ers game, with the block punt, with this game, with all of the stuff we just mentioned, and the multiple missed kicks. Special teams once again is a huge thorn in your side and gets in your way. The Packers beating themselves. Again, numerous issues throughout the course of the game where they shoot themselves in the foot. And again, just not closing the door and getting the kill when you have the opportunity to get the kill. These sort of mistakes, these issues, and these sort of games, and to have Chicago beat for a second time, and there's a real piece of me that in this game, as I'm going through this, I there was a calm about me because I'm an idiot and thought they're not going to choke away this again. We've seen this too many times. They learned their lesson in Chicago already. I know that there's going to be some really tense and frustrating moments, but especially once you got the Matthew Golden touchdown. I like everything. I just felt really calm about the whole situation, and I should have known better. I should have known better. This is right now as big of a part of the Packers' DNA as the success of Jordan Love, as trading for Micah Parsons, as drafting and developing, as awful, god awful special teams is. These sort of playoff losses and these big losses in key moments are as much of a part of the Packers' DNA right now as anything else. There's no other way to put it. There's no sugarcoating it. We're 16 years away, I guess 15 years away from the last Super Bowl. You know, there's been some good moments, no question, but there's been far too many of these sort of games in the playoffs over and over. It feels like it's Groundhog Day. It feels like it's Groundhog Day in Green Bay of just how are they going to lose this time? And I don't know how you move past that. I really don't. Because you have a fan base that's just, by the way, completely scarred right now. Like, even if this game were at Lambeau, I mean, you would get nervous, you know, Packers fans of just like, when is this game going to turn? I don't even know that it would be the home field advantage that you would want it to be, because I think we're just watching for fallen pianos at every moment. What's going to happen next? What's going to go wrong? Oh, we're up 35-0. Doesn't matter. We'll find a way. We'll find a way to lose this one. It's a pessimistic way of looking at it, but when it tells you it, and again, even I in this one, like an idiot, was like, no, they're going to be fine. Breathe. They're going to get through this. There's going to be some choppy moments, but they're not going to choke this one again. They can't choke it again. Oh, they can. They will. They'll find a way. And they did. The two big ones that you're going to go back, there's a billion, but if you go back to the real big moment in this game, it was right after the Matthew Golden touchdown, and it's 4th-and-3. And Drew Dalman kind of has like a little false snap, And then he snaps it way over the head of Caleb Williams. And if there's no false start on that play, it goes over and it's done. You're going to get him and the game is over. And even then you get a penalty and it's 4th and 8 and Isaiah McDuffie comes and gets good pressure. If you want the double kick in the nuts here, because of course you do, why don't you? That's what we're accustomed to at this point. I think if Edgerrin Cooper's in that game, and if that's Edgerrin Cooper instead of Isaiah McDuffie on the exact same rush, which it would have been in that situation, I think Cooper with his speed gets there. McDuffie didn't do anything wrong. McDuffie did it great. He played it really well. He turned the corner and he got pressure on Caleb. If that's Cooper, Cooper's just a tick quicker. And he might get there and be able to make that play and not allow Caleb to get that ball off. With that, even with McDuffie getting that pressure on him, that's one of the throws of the year from Caleb Williams. I mean, that is an absurd, insane, like just ridiculous throw. And if that one is just incomplete, if he doesn't make that, it's game over. You're up by 2 scores with the ball. And it with like what, 5 minutes left or something like that, it's going to be done. You get the ball in their territory. I guess I should just assume that Green Bay maybe still would have found a way, but it's that's the huge game changer right there. Of course, Chicago goes down, scores a touchdown, and the rest is history. Those are two just massive, massive moments in the game. We'll be right back. Today's episode is brought to you by Prize Picks. Now, whether you're starting a new routine or making player picks for the very first time, trying something new can be difficult. But in life and on Prize Picks, it always feels good to be right. And with high-pressure playoff matchups every weekend and elite hoops action every night, the action never stops. And Prize Picks lets you take control. Now, I love how simple Prize Picks is to use and how fun it is to play. This football season has been even more fun this year with Prize Picks, and getting in my picks for each slate of game has been a super fun part of each football weekend. And listen, I get we're all having withdrawals from our fantasy leagues being over with, so this is the perfect time to stay in fantasy game mode by using Prize Picks every single week. And if you haven't checked lately, Prize Picks is now available in all 50 states. So what are you waiting for? Download the Prize Picks app today and use code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. That's code PACKADAY to get $50 in lineups after you play your first $5 lineup. And again, make sure that you're using that code PACKADAY. Prize Picks. It's good to be right. All right. So you know what I have no time for in my life anymore? Irritation. And I really don't have time for neck irritation. Now, I've tried just about every form of razor that you could possibly imagine. And no matter what, there always seems to be some sort of issue or irritation that comes from them. That was until I switched to Harry's Plus. Harry's Plus gives you a barbershop quality shave with German engineered blades that are each honed at 3 different angles to cut hair evenly without tugging. These blades are optimized to glide smoothly and easily, and every cartridge includes a lubricating strip with aloe and vitamin E to calm skin while you shave. And the best part is how affordable it is. Now, Harry's controls the entire process from steel to shelf, and they are able to keep the cost low because of it. So why pay $30 for refills when Harry's gives you better blades for a fraction of that? And right now, for a limited time, our listeners can get the Harry's Plus trial set for only $10 at harrys.com/packaday. This set includes the all-new Harry's Plus razor, 1 refined 5-blade cartridge, a 2-ounce foaming shave gel, and a travel cover to protect your blades on the go. Just head to harrys.com/packaday to claim this offer. And after your purchase, they'll ask you where you heard about them. Please support our show and tell them Packaday sent you. We talked about the special teams. Rich Bisaccia, there's no forgiveness here. And again, maybe he's not the one that kicks. But we talked about all the special teams errors. You were the 30th ranked special teams in EPA. And then you continue to have a massive amount of special teams errors. And I know we can talk about some of the things that Green Bay needs to do organizationally better. At some point, you get what you have to work with, and you've got to find a way to make it work and not be catastrophic. And once again, in this game, the Packers special teams was catastrophic, specifically Brandon McManus. I don't know how you can bring Brandon McManus back after that. And maybe that's short-sighted, but he struggled way too much this year. And when you needed him most, he failed. He failed at an extremely high level. And if he just makes his kicks, this is an entirely different game. I mean, Brandon McManus cost Green Bay a touchdown, 7 points, two missed field goals, and an extra point. 7 points on missed kicks. It's just insane that this stuff continues to happen. So yes, Rich Bisaccia, no forgiveness. And I don't know. I thought the most absurd thing of the offseason, of all the things that they made, all the moves that they made, was extending, you know, Rich Bisaccia further. It's just absurd. And now you can't move forward with them. I just don't know how you can do it. Travis Wilson had a great stat on Matt LaFleur, who obviously has a lot of blood on his hands for this game as well, and just not being able to get this team to the level that they need to be and can't close out the game the way that they need to. In the first half, this is again for Travis Wilson, Matt LaFleur played 15 plays under center. The offense played 15 plays under center in 12 out of shotgun. Had a ton of success. Kept Chicago completely off balance. In the second half, Matt LaFleur played 5 plays under center, 35 in shotgun. Now, 24 were under shotgun prior to that final drive where you had to be in shotgun and throw the ball, right? So even still, 5 and 24 is a lot different than 15 and 12 in the first half. To some real extent, he got away from what was working in the first half. Did Chicago change up their game plan? They did. They really did. But I don't think just going full shotgun in the second half was the right way to combat that. And it was an issue. And I thought Matt LaFleur had a really poor second half. I'll be honest and transparent, even with watching the game, I'm going to have to watch the All-22 to dive in a little bit deeper as to what went wrong in the second half. I do think Chicago made some good adjustments. I don't think Green Bay did a good job adjusting to their adjustments at all. Clearly, goes without saying. I thought the offensive line was really, really poor in the second half as well. And then with that, let's just talk about the obvious. I talked about this a few weeks ago of, you know, whatever Super Bowl equity the Packers had left. And to me, you win and lose games in the trenches. And Green Bay had every right to win this game and should have won this game. There's no long-term ability to win a Super Bowl in this year because they can't win in the trenches. And I thought Jeff Hafley did some good things with, doing everything he could to keep this team in it through it for as long as he could. But at the end of the day, when you can't get to the quarterback, and in the second half, especially for Green Bay's offense, they could not run block for crap. And they were allowing a lot of rushers on Jordan Love on a bad defensive line for Chicago. Trenches just weren't good enough. And that's on offensive line and defensive line coaches. That's, of course, on injuries to Micah Parsons and Devontae Wyatt and Zach Tom. And it's ultimately not good enough. And those injuries absolutely play a huge part. But yeah, it just wasn't good enough. And they had no real opportunity to make a significant run, in large part because the offensive line and defensive lines just ultimately weren't good enough. And yes, again, injuries play a major part in that. Fourth quarter defense was obviously atrocious. And as mentioned, I think Jeff Hafley did about as good of a job with a bunch of scraps that he had left over to put together, what was it, only 9 points that they allowed through a huge chunk of this game again. And I think he does deserve some credit for that. But when this defense had to have it at the end, they just could not get stops. And again, you don't have great corners. You don't have a pass rush, but you're one-dimensional. You're one-dimensional. And Green Bay had to find a way to get stops, and they couldn't do it. They couldn't do it at all. And it was as much as, you know, the offense played great to begin with and sort of choked at the end, the defense played great to begin with and also choked at the end. It took all 22. Uncomplimentary football. That was the one time they were complimentary, when they were both choking things away at the end. And that's very, very frustrating. I will give you some positives. I'm sure there's more than this, but Jordan Love was phenomenal. If you hear or see anybody that is putting any of this blame on Jordan Love, it's just pure nonsense. Pure and utter insane nonsense. Jordan Love's advanced metrics in this game are as good as you will see from a quarterback. Like, it is as good. 4 touchdowns, no picks. Even 2 of his incompletions in this game are before halftime, just to waste time so that the field goal, you know, can come with no time left on the clock at the end of the first half. Would you have liked to have seen him, you know, make the rally at the end? Sure, but Jaden Reed had a huge drop at the end. Dobbs had a drop. The Dobbs drop was probably advantageous because he wouldn't have got enough yards to pick up anything. So that one didn't hurt a ton, but the read drop really did. The read drop really did. Also, there's that play to Christian Watson where Love maybe just misses him, but he's crushed at the same time he throws. If he gets a little bit of protection there, you might have a game-winning touchdown to Christian Watson on that play. Like, that's how close that one was too. I thought Jordan was phenomenal. He was as good as you could possibly want. Completely outplayed Caleb Williams if you look again at any advancement metrics, and is probably the biggest difference of what he deserved for what the result was in this game. Jordan put this team on his back for a huge chunk of the game and deserved every right to win, and the rest of the team really let him down, and that sucks. But he was phenomenal. He was absolutely phenomenal. Edgerrin Cooper. Cooper was fantastic in this game. You would have liked to have seen him hold on to that one interception. But when Edgerrin Cooper was in this game, they allowed 6 points. Do I think it was all because of that? No. But when Edgerrin Cooper was in this game, they allowed 6 points. They allowed 25 points without him. And I don't think it's an entire coincidence because of that. Cooper was playing out of his damn mind. And then he went out and the defense completely fell apart from there. Matthew Golden. Great to see him get that opportunity and make the most of it. First touchdown catch. What an unbelievable play that was. Really, really cool play for him. As I've talked about all year, he's going to be really freaking good. And you got to see that today. And you're going to get more of it next year. And I'm really, really excited what he's going to be moving forward. Micah Parsons clearly did not play in this game. The Packers were 0-5 in games that he did not finish or play in. So the Broncos game, and then, of course, the Final Four, all coinciding with Micah Parsons being out. They did not win a game post Micah Parsons' injury. And, of course, right up until that point in the Broncos game, they were trending in an unbelievable direction and looked like they were a Super Bowl contender. So suffice to say, Micah Parsons' injury was a massive issue, and they just couldn't make up for it. Some miscellaneous snap counts per Justice Mosqueda. Trayvon Diggs only played one snap. So you lost a half a million in salary cap space next year for a handful of snaps against Minnesota that didn't count and one snap in the postseason game. Now, maybe they keep him and they find a way to renegotiate a contract, and that was the way to get him introduced to Green Bay, and maybe he plays great for Green Bay next year. That's some possibility, but for this year, you paid him over a half million for one postseason snap. Not usually a great use of resources. It's not a ton of money, but that does count against, that's money you could have carried over into the salary cap next year. So it does matter. Meanwhile, Baron Sorrell played 28 snaps, Brenton Cox only 4. So Sorrell did really take Brenton Cox's kind of job in this particular game. We'll be right back. Let's talk about what everyone wants to talk about. That's, of course, firing Matt LaFleur. I, as most of you know, have been about the most staunch Matt LaFleur supporter. I didn't think it was time to make a change. I thought for the vast majority of the season, I still think for the vast majority of the season, the talk of Matt LaFleur getting fired was ridiculous and absurd. But a few months ago, or probably 2 months ago, when people wanted to continue to bring this up, I said, listen, if there's a catastrophic end of the season, they lose 4, 5, 6 games in a row at the end and get, you know, blown out or have a devastating loss in the first round of the playoffs, we can talk about it at that time. Here we are. 5 losses in a row and the most devastating possible outcome in the final loss to Chicago in the wild card round with another first round exit. Everything's on the table. Everything should be on the table. Now, we had reports from Ian Rappaport specifically that Matt LaFleur's status was not in jeopardy regardless of what happened in this game. I don't know how you can just wave this away and at minimum not have the discussion. I don't know how you come back from this. Meaning organizationally, it's going to take a bit of a reboot from Matt LaFleur's standpoint. And I think there's a strong argument to be made that you're better off starting fresh and starting with a new regime after that type of loss. I think Matt's a really good coach. I think he's done a lot of really good things. I will probably be less upset than 99.9% of you out there if he does end up being back. But I probably lean towards now more making a change than anything else, just because I think this is brutal to come back from. Do I think you could bounce back? Maybe. But the fact, I talked about this on the live post-game show. If you wanted to Ocean's 11 this thing and build the perfect blueprint to getting fired, or as I talked about as well, if you wanted to go full George Costanza, if you remember the story, the storyline in Seinfeld, George was trying to get fired from the Yankees so that he could go to the Mets. If Matt LaFleur was trying to get out of Green Bay and they put together the perfect blueprint on how to get fired, I got to get fired and then I can go to any team that I want. All right, here's the blueprint. I don't know how he could have made a better one. I don't know how you could have fantasy booked this in any different way than what he did or what it transpired at the end of the year to lose 5 games in a row and have this Bears game to, you know, go down exactly like it did, to choke it away like it was to get to this point. You could not have done it any differently at all to have this be the case and to be talking about a real situation where Matt probably should either, you know, is everything's in question. I'll put it that way. It probably should be moved on from. I think it's a fair assessment. Maybe this is reactionary. Maybe this is heat of the moment. Maybe in a couple of days I'll feel different. Maybe in a week I'll feel different. But here's the big thing. They have to do this now if they're going to do it. You have 8 vacant positions at head coach. You have potentially 9 and 10 with, depending on what happens with Sean McDermott and Mike Tomlin this weekend. You could have 2 more open if they get fired after, if they were to lose their games, or if Tomlin and the Steelers were just going in a different direction, whatever that might end up looking like. And LaFleur could be 11 in that case, but at minimum, he would be number 9 if you let him go. You cannot wait. You cannot wait for these coaches to get picked through to make your decision of what you're going to do. You have to make that decision now. And a part of that might get tricky because if maybe you don't want to fire Matt or somebody else is interested in Matt and you could get, you know, some sort of compensation for it, that makes it tough. But I don't know that you can wait around right now. This is not the deepest class of head coaches. And so if you want in on that class of coaches and you want to get the best coach possible, well, then you better move extremely, extremely fast to make this decision. Because if you don't, it's going to be picked over and you're going to be in an even worse spot. I think there's a really good chance that if you move on from Matt, you end up with a worse coach. But I don't know that that would, you know, make me hesitate after that loss to make the change. The fact that you choked away a game again at the end, and I'll continue to say that because that's what it was. The fact that this was the amalgamation of all the things that have sort of gone wrong in the Matt LaFleur era, all rolled into one shiny little package in another just insane loss in the postseason. The fact that he's 3-10 against, you know, postseason teams the last 2 years. The fact that you haven't won but one playoff game since 2020. So 2021, 2022, 23, 24, 25. You've won one playoff game against against Dallas in Dallas. The fact that in his career, in 6 different postseasons, he has 3 playoff wins. Now, if you had the first round bye and all 3 of those playoff wins happened in the same year, you could win a Super Bowl. But a lot of times, in order to win a Super Bowl, you're going to have to win 4 games in the same offseason or the same postseason. And Matt has 6 in all of his post, or sorry, has 3 wins in all of his postseason combined in 6 postseasons. There are a lot of things that you could point to say it's time to move on. I think there are a lot of things that you could point to say, hey, he's a really good coach and maybe we should consider keeping him. And this round of, you know, open coaches that are out there is not the most inspiring in the world. I know maybe the follow-up question, as it was a lot of times in the live post-game show of, well, if it's not Matt, who do you want it to be? Is it John Harbaugh? Or is it, you know, Kevin Stefanski? Is it Jeff Hafley? My answer is I don't know yet. Let's see if that happens first. It's a fair conjecture and question to ask. There's a lot of people I'd interview, Brian Flores, you know, Anthony Campanelli, even from Jacksonville, Jeff Hafley, Shula from the Rams, John Harbaugh. There's a variety of people. We listed all of them in the live post-game chat of people I'd be interested in to interview. Doesn't mean hire, but interview, absolutely. Clint Kubiak in Seattle. There'd be a lot of people I'd be very interested in, but making that change, it's a major move. And Ed Policy has a major decision on his hands, what to do with this entire organization right now. I don't think Goody's going anywhere no matter what. And people might not like Goody. The Packers are a Super Bowl contender in 2026. Would you agree, right? I think that they are a contender in 2026, so they have the roster to contend. Well, that's Goody. This is his entire roster. Right? Has he been perfect? No. But the other thing I'll say is his misses have been first-round picks. If you want a case against him, although Jordan Love, first-round pick, which is going to buy a GM a ton of time when you get a franchise QB, but his kryptonite as of late has been first-round picks. Well, he doesn't have any the next 2 years. And what his superpower is finding late-round draft picks that are really good. And right now, you need that superpower the next 2 years because you don't have a first-round pick in either year. So I actually think it makes a lot of sense to keep him around for the time being. But then you've got to make the decision on Matt LaFleur. And I you know, people ask, all right, you know, squirt gun to your head, what are you going to do? Or what is it, more importantly, what is Green Bay going to do? I honestly don't know. If that squirt gun's pointed at my temple, I'm probably saying I think they keep him because this is what they do. They're loyal. But you can't give him a long-term extension, right? And are you going to want to give him a plus one? I don't know if there's a good outcome here. I don't know if there's a good outcome. If you can send him to Miami or Atlanta and get compensation and it's just a fresh start for both, maybe that's the best of all worlds. But again, you kind of need to make this really fast because you have to get in that coaching search right now, like right now. We'll talk more about this, all of it, throughout the offseason. There's a lot of offseason moves ahead, and if they make a change at coach, that's obviously going to be a major decision. Who they could go with as coach is going to be kind of up for grabs. Again, we talked about some of those names, but we'll kind of keep tabs on that as well if Green Bay does make the move. Of course, Jeff Hafley could potentially get a head coaching job somewhere else, which could open up that. Rich Bisaccia, you know, somebody like Luke Butkus, their job should be very much in question right now. And Green Bay is going to have to figure out a way to bounce back from this, be better next year, whether it's with Matt or somebody else. That's one that sticks with you. As Bob Uecker said at the last postseason game that he called, that one has some sting on it. This one had a lot of sting on it. And it's becoming more and more and more frequent that these type of games have been happening. I don't envy, you know, Ed Policy's initial decision, but that's why he's in the spot, is to make decisions exactly like this. And I'll say it one more time. I think Matt's a good coach overall. I think there's probably a pretty darn good chance that if Matt gets fired, you end up with a coach that's worse than Matt. More often than not, most coaches are, you know, from a winning percentage standpoint and things like that. But I think running it back and just keeping things status quo, I think there's a lot of risk in that as well. I think there's a lot of risk. And I don't know that there's going to be the confidence. And if Ed Policy does decide to keep Matt LaFleur, he's going to have a very frustrated fan base. And the heat of 1,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000,000, nuclear in 2026. I don't know that that's the way you want to go in. I have heard, you know, some people ask, well, do you think bringing in a new head coach would like reset the timeline and they're not going to be able to win a Super Bowl this year? I don't see it that way. I mean, right now, Ben Johnson and, you know, Jacksonville's coach and Mike Vrabel. Why can't I keep forgetting Jacksonville's coach's name? It is Liam Cohen. So Liam Cohen, Ben Johnson, Mike Vrabel are all in first-time head coaches for their respective teams this year. That's three of the remaining 12 teams, and easily one of them could win a Super Bowl. I don't think the Bears can. Jaguars, maybe. Patriots, maybe. There's a good chance one of them is, you know, representing the AFC in the AFC championship game. We'll see what the playoffs bring. But no, I don't think that's a precursor, and I don't think you base it off of that. I think you try to get somebody in for the job that makes sense. If you do go in, you know, forward with firing Matt, and you try to do the best you can to find the right coach to lead you and hopefully to the promised land this upcoming season. That's all I got for you guys for now. It sucks. Postseason games are a privilege. Heartbreaking losses are a privilege of being a postseason team. But it doesn't make it any easier in the moment. And these are piling up. And like I said, we as Packers fans are getting scarred over and over and over by a lot of these losses. And I get maybe there's some entitled town or whatever. And maybe the expectations are just too high every year. But it feels like this team has not reached the level that it's capable of on numerous occasions since their last Super Bowl. And this is just another of those instances. So what happens from here on out remains to be seen. Take a moment. This is not for me, but if you listen to Cheesehead TV, Packs What She Said, Locked On Packers, if you're reading guys like Matt Schneidman at The Athletic or Jason Wilde, Wes Hodkiewicz and Mike Spofford, the Press Gazette, Pete Doherty, you know, Tom Silverstein, Ryan Wood, etc. Take a moment to thank your favorite podcast reporters / beat writers / everyone. There are a lot of really awesome people that do an incredible job of covering this team. And shout out to all those people that I mentioned and everyone else that I didn't get to mention. Zach Cruz, Justice Mosqueda, there's a billion, and they all do a really incredible job. And I love their passion for the Packers. Those that are Packers fans and those on the beat that are not, the work that they put into it, Rob Domofsky, et cetera. Shout out to all of them. It's a sucky year. It's a really sucky year. Peaked from NFL draft with it being in Green Bay and drafting Matthew Golden to trading for Micah Parsons to winning the first two games. And then pretty much everything downhill from there. Obviously some moments that you like, the Detroit game on Thanksgiving and things like that. But for the most part, you peaked early and you never came back from that. So Green Bay was 9-8-1 on the season. And so they were, after week two, after that 2-0 start, they were 7-8-1. Think about that. 7-8-1 after those first two wins when everyone felt like this team was on top of the world. With a loss to the Cleveland Browns, a tie to Dallas, a loss to Carolina, a loss to Philly, a loss to Denver, a loss to Chicago, a loss to Baltimore, a loss to Minnesota, a loss to Chicago. 7-8-1. And your wins? Pittsburgh is a solid win. Detroit's a solid win in there. Chicago's a solid win in there. But wins against Cincinnati, Arizona, New York, Minnesota, some not great wins in there too. It's a crushing year from expectations and the 2-0 start and trading for Micah and the moment where you draft Matthew Golden to going 7-8-1 the rest of the year, first round playoff exit, a billion injuries, and not coming anywhere close to the expectations that I think everyone had for this team. As disappointing and as frustrating of a year that I can remember, at least in correlation to expectations going into it. And even after you saw proof of concept in those first 2 weeks. Hope you guys enjoyed the journey somewhat. I know I did, even though it was disappointing, heart-wrenching, brutal at times. I always love the journey. As I mentioned, I love talking Packers every single day. It's never a burden. It's never a curse. It's always fun. It's always, there's always something that we get to talk about. And I love that. If you are somebody, and I understand that there are people out there that you're in season fans, right? And the off season maybe doesn't interest you. I would highly consider checking out a lot of our off season stuff here at Packaday. We got you 365. I know, you know, we'll see what happens in the coaching searches, defensive coordinator, special teams coordinator, offensive coordinator, head coach, offensive line coach, and some things like that. It certainly feels like at minimum, there's going to be some changes. We'll see what happens there. That's going to be a huge part of this early on. Starts tomorrow as we start breaking down these offseason decisions. There's going to be some big decisions to be made. Quay Walker, Rashawn Gary, Josh Jacobs, Sean Ryan, Romeo Doubs. There's some really big decisions to make for who stays and who goes on this team. They will have a little bit of free agent ability to sign a player or two if they want. We'll keep tabs on that. See if they make any trades. The draft, despite not having a first round pick, is still going to be really interesting. And it's even going to be more onus on Green Bay, despite not having a first round pick, to have a home run draft because they're going to need it. And this offseason is going to be very interesting to see how they handle a variety of different things. So make sure to keep checking us out 365 days here on the Packaday podcast. If you'd be so kind as to like, subscribe, comment, give those 5-star reviews. Again, I cannot thank you guys enough for all the love throughout the year. Shout out especially to our All-Pro and Hall of Fame members, PJ Wynn, John Wild, Brandon Paletta, Boom Handle, Donnelly, Lori Lord, Baby QB, David McCluskey, Alex Wong, Peter Rataka, Jay Zimmerman, B. Brown, Puerto Rican Packer, Dan Gesford, SoCal Pack, Chris Rager, Izzy Roberts, Ian Ewing, Willie Winkle Stinkle, The Gable Storm, Pack Attack Cast, Chris Weiss, Craig, John D. Metropolis, Hayden Radomski, Devin Lane, Alexander Newell, Bill Reinhart, Richard Morales, Les Nienau, Beast Bumblebee, Benjamin Sargent, Christian Bradley, Steve Bates, John Mark Lydell, Nemo, Jay Conner, and Donald Decker. I'll see you guys tomorrow, right back here for an all new episode. Enjoy the Sunday of playoff games as best you can. Keep an eye on everything that's going on in Packers land. We'll have you covered on the Pack a Day podcast. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.